Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by ServPro. Cleaning, restoration, construction.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
I am, just like all of you, so excited about G-Day. We've said before, we love this time of year for sports fans. You know, March Madness coming to an end last night, baseball getting rolling, WrestleMania was fantastic this weekend, Masters coming up, by the way, more on that here in just a little bit. And obviously for many of us, that spring game, Georgia G-Day, because we sort of live and die and eat and breathe Georgia football, that's probably the biggest thing of all for us, and it comes up on Saturday. And I want to kind of sort of share some G-Day thoughts with you kind of in this vein. I have kind of a bold prediction. Now, when you hear this bold prediction, I think there is going to probably be a remnant of this that sort of feels like wishful thinking, and perhaps that's true. I'll own that here right now. And yet at the same time, when you think about what we've been kind of hearing, this is also one of those things that I think has a chance to come true. And it could, and this is the most important part of all, it could foreshadow what I think could be a very important development for Georgia when the real games start being played later on this fall. So let me see if I can set it all up this way. At the very end of the press conference last Tuesday, which is the last time we've heard from Kirby Smart, won't hear from him again until after G-Day concludes, Kirby Smart was asked by our colleague Mike Griffith about an interview that he'd given to ESPN.com, and we thought it was pretty candid in the interview. And one of the things that came up was Kirby's belief that perhaps Georgia was a little slow in turning loose Carson Beck last year. That's not quite the way that Kirby Smart said it, but that was the basic gist of the conversation, that Kirby's, as you would imagine, pretty impressed with Carson Beck. And Mike Boba, the offensive coordinator and the offensive staff, grew to really be very pleased with how Carson was playing a year ago and his growth, his development, his overall talent level. And the one thing that it sounds like they want to have in place here for this season is to really turn him loose. And I think the phrase, what was it, like, let the cat play or whatever, whatever the phrasing was, but to really kind of like unleash him to be the very best that he can be in 2024. And so based on what Kirby had told ESPN the other day, Mike Griffith at the end of the press conference last Tuesday asked Kirby to kind of expound on that thought. And I think the words that Kirby used becomes a really important setup for what I'm hoping to see on G-Day on Saturday and what I'm going to predict we will see on G-Day on Saturday. So let's start with Kirby Smart on the topic of Carson Beck here today.
Well, your offense can only be as aggressive as the players around him. It's not all on the quarterback. And when I say that about let the cat go play, that really came more from Mike and the offensive staff in terms of allowing him to play and play to his strengths. His strengths are his ability to navigate the pocket, to make throws, to change plays, and to put us in the right play. That's his greatest strengths, and to use the weapons around him. So I think he'll continue to do that. He's done that thus far. He makes you right a lot. He's very hard to trick and confuse. And when you've got a player like that, as long as he has weapons around him, he can distribute the ball. And our offense has a lot of ways, which you guys have seen in the past. We have a large volume of catchers, meaning it spreads out. We don't necessarily have one guy with 150, but we got a bunch of guys with a lot of touches. And the reason we can do that is the decision making that Carson has and the experience he has. So I'm excited to see him go play. Keeping him healthy and protected is important, but also surrounding him with playmakers that can capitalize on his strengths will make us a better offense.
I love the word playmakers, because to me, it just connotates so much, right? Like there's so much meaning sort of captured in a very, simple word, right? Playmaker just stands out in terms of what it means to a football fan. There's an understanding we all have about what a playmaker is. And when a coach like Kirby, who's a little bit more kind of nuts and bolts and sort of a little bit more all business, when he uses a word like playmaker, it kind of gets me even more interested. And I think that's been one of the fun things to try to follow this spring, and the whispers of, hey, did you hear so-and-so made this play during a scrimmage? Or, our buddy Terrence Edwards, who, got a chance to see some of this with his own eyes. And I thought last Thursday, when he was on the show, did a great job of describing some of what he's seen from some of those wide receivers at the practice he got to see. But it's really been one of the most fun things about this spring practice is following all the rumor mill and following all of that about what the, you know, potential playmakers are doing for Georgia here right now. And, you know, every now and then, for those of you who've been with us for a long time, or you're, you know, sort of a regular viewer or a listener to the program, you know, I kind of get on my little kicks on certain things. And, you know, a kick that I've been on as of late, I've been really hopeful that this upcoming season, a great way to kind of measure the success of Carson Beck is, you know, could Carson Beck match the, you know, sort of single season program record for touchdown passes at Georgia? And what we've said is that there is very little to nitpick about the Georgia offense the last couple of years. One of only two teams in America to average 40 points per game over the course of the last two seasons. Georgia is, full stop, one of the most successful offenses in the country, no matter what the overall program reputation has been. But this was also a situation a year ago in which Georgia, the one loss that it had was a game in which it was held below that 30-point mark. And you'd like to say, hey, moving forward, if you want to make yourself more impervious to getting upset, more bulletproof against possible defeat, then have that offense that sort of shows up at that 30-plus point barrier every single game. You know, don't have any game where you're below your standard offensively, and all of a sudden that might be your pathway to get back to a national championship again. And one thing we've said is, as a way of doing that, perhaps a little bit more balance in how Georgia scores its touchdowns. Obviously, there's a good bit of balance between the total number of rushing plays and the total number of passing plays. The overall stat line balance is a little bit close there as well. Georgia was one of the most successful passing teams in America last year, but there was a huge imbalance in terms of the fact that Georgia led the nation in rushing touchdowns. That's something you don't complain about, of course, but, you know, far fewer passing touchdowns. What we said was, if Georgia can find a way to throw a few more touchdowns this year, if Beck could get to a number like 36, which given the current impression of Carson is not a crazy thing, right? That would put him third best in America compared to what last year's stats were. That obviously put him, you know, tops in program history here at UGA. But given what Carson could be, just seems like that could be a thing that possibly happens. Now, this is where we get into Saturday, because if Georgia is going to throw more passing touchdowns, and if Georgia is going to unlock all of the playmaking potential of the wide receivers in this program, I think there are a couple that probably matter more than any others. Now, what I'm about to say is these are not the best receivers in the Georgia team necessarily, but in terms of what I'd like to see, a little bit more of an explosive passing game producing more passing touchdowns, I think these two receivers probably matter in this discussion more than any other, and it just so happens these are two guys who are generating a lot of buzz here this spring. One of those is the veteran, the guy that I believe has been here longer than anybody, that's Arian Smith. You also know him to be a speed burner, too. You remember the huge play, for instance, he made, touchdown in the Peach Bowl against Ohio State, one of the great plays of the Kirby Smart era, I would say, because it propelled a comeback in what might have been the single most exhilarating game in the Kirby Smart era, perhaps. And apparently Arian Smith's been making big plays in the closed-door scrimmages and during practices and things like that. So on Saturday, on Tuesday, when Kirby Smart spoke last week, he talked about what it is that Arian Smith has been able to do thus far this spring. And Smart, in doing so, I think made a very interesting statement about just how hard Georgia has been working to make Arian be the kind of playmaker that Georgia thinks he can be. Here's Kirby Smart again.
We've made a concerted effort to spend more time on developing Arian. I think, you know, when he decided to come back, I told him, I said, look, I want there to be a purpose with you coming back. Like, where are the areas of growth? We've done some things during special teams period, I think, he's been a really dominant special teams player, and he knows that, and he knows he loves that, he embraces that. That's like where he made his first name, is being a dominant special teams player. And so we've taken some of those times that he's invested 4 years in special teams work, and we've allowed him to really grow as a wideout. And I think it's helped him do that. He's had some plays, I think he'd be the first to tell you he wish he had back, intermediate routes and deep routes, and then he's had some big plays too. So I'm pleased with where Arian is. I hope he keeps getting better and keeps growing and trying to be an explosive playmaker for us.
Explosive playmaker, there's that phrase again. Let me tell you why I think Arian Smith's so interesting for Georgia and important in terms of my sort of goal for this team, which is to throw more passing touchdowns here this year. I was looking at some numbers, and this is sort of what I expected to see, and as it turns out, it's basically exactly what I assumed it was. Arian Smith, in 4 years at Georgia, only has 20 career catches, which I'm sure he would like to have had a lot more. Georgia fans have been kind of hopeful for more of that from Arian Smith. But did you know, it's sort of an old school throwback to the end of SportsCenter, did you know, of the 20 career catches that Arian Smith has had, six have gone for touchdowns. That when you think about Arian Smith, what he has been, sort of a swing for the fences, home run style hitter. Also in terms of the sort of the yards per catch in two national championship seasons, 2021 and 2022, Arian Smith had three catches in 2021, but they were 34 yards per catch. He had seven catches in 2022, 28.3 yards per catch. That Arian Smith just been this home run hitter. It's either an explosive or it's a touchdown, and that's kind of been the story for his career. Now, if Arian was telling his story, he may say not quite as much of it as I would like to have had, which is maybe true, but he has shown that explosive ability and shown that touchdown catching ability when he's been able to touch the football. So if you want more passing touchdowns from Georgia here this year, the possible emergence at the end of his career here at Georgia for Arian Smith, I think, is a really, really important thing. Similarly, there's another player in terms of the overall theme of a Georgia team that just throws for more touchdowns this year, much how Arian Smith could be a guy that really enhances that production for Georgia. Another guy of a similar vein is Colby Young. Now, Young is a newcomer to Georgia, but last year at Miami kind of did some big things, and it seems like, as we've been hearing, whispers, rumors, innuendo, has really kind of had himself a nice spring, even though at times he's been kind of nursing what we think is a little bit of an ankle injury. It sounds like he's continuing to do some really good stuff. And once again, going back to last week, Kirby Smart talked about that there as well. Kirby on the subject of Colby Young.
Colby Young, he's flashed. He's had some really, really great, spectacular plays. And then he's disappeared at times. So it's a learning curve. Like, he doesn't have confidence and know the offense inside and out completely. So I don't think you can judge a skill set on one-on-ones when he goes against DBs. You don't really judge a skill set in a scrimmage right now because he's trying to figure everything out. And it's not from like a freshman standpoint. It's from a familiarity standpoint. And I'm pleased with where he is. And he's really a hard worker. And where he's shown up is on special teams. I mean, he's shown a commitment to special teams that I didn't expect to see, which shows me his toughness level and his buy-in.
Kirby obviously doesn't like to hype up, these type of guys. So he's, kind of careful not to do that there, and perhaps with a good reason. But the point is, behind the scenes, we've certainly heard plenty of good things about him. And once again, when you look at the overall stat line for Colby, you get an idea for why he could be important if Georgia is going to be more potent in terms of the passing touchdowns it throws to the program here this year. Last year for Miami, a team that really wasn't that good of a football team and specifically wasn't a very dynamic passing offense, no Mario Cristobal coach team ever is, but Colby Young had himself a nice year. He had five touchdowns for Miami a year ago. That would have been more than any other pass catcher at Georgia not named Brock Bowers. So Colby Young's been a little bit of a touchdown catching presence for offenses that were nowhere near as good as the one we expect Georgia to be here in 2024. So once again, much like Arian Smith, who's shown a sort of a penchant for making the big catches when he makes catches, Colby Young has sort of shown that ability to say, I know how to receive the ball in the end zone and, convert red zone drips, things like that, into touchdown opportunities. And that's kind of what we've been hearing a lot. And I think really, really an exciting and hopeful message for what Georgia can be later on this fall. So here's where we get to the bold prediction part of this. On Saturday, I believe both Colby Young and Arian Smith will punctuate what seemingly has been good spring practices for them, a very good spring session for them. They'll both get touchdowns on Saturday. That's what I believe that we're going to see. I believe we're going to see kind of a culmination of two strong spring performances from both those guys. And when that happens, if it does, I think that stands as a real showcase for what exactly this Georgia offense can be. We already know the Georgia offense is going to be good because for the last 3 years, it's been stellar. It's been right there around 40 points per game. And we know what Carson Beck is. Beck comes back with the accolades of top returning quarterback in college football, who could be a Heisman Trophy winner, who could be a first-round draft pick, and perhaps he could be a very high first-round draft pick, maybe even number one overall. But what specifically does that mean for the Georgia offense? When Carson is playing on Saturday, some of what we see on G-Day is a little bit of a foreshadowing of that, that a team that has a chance to be a lot more potent through the air and perhaps record-setting in terms of passing touchdowns, and two guys who could go a long way towards contributing to that Arian Smith and Colby Young, I believe they both get touchdowns on Saturday. My name's Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented today by ServPro. We are happy to have you with us, no matter how you get to us here. Live on video across all platforms at 10 a.m., radio noon, Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, podcast, wherever you find them, Apple, Spotify. We post the show at worldfamousdognation.com. It's dropping right there at like that noon hour, right around 12 o'clock, and so many of you are so loyal to like click right into it at the moment it pops into your feed. And so look for it every day because we are there for you each and every day. And we are certainly appreciative of our friends at ServPro who make all of this possible. We could not do this without them. And literally in the past, we found ourselves in a situation we've been just absolutely, you know, you've heard the phrase up a creek. We literally were almost up a creek because we had water flowing everywhere in our old studio one time. And our friends at ServPro came and cleaned all that up. Now, why do they do that? Because they are restoration specialists. And that's one of those things that to truly restore a piece of property, whether it be the home you live in or your commercial property where your business is housed, or perhaps it's a rental property you depend on for some passive income, to truly restore that to its proper condition after a mess, fire, water damage, I would say you have to be a specialist to do that right. And that's what the folks at ServPro have dedicated themselves to. In fact, so much so that each and every ServPro franchise independently owned and operated. These are people who say, hey, we want to make our business. We want to build our livelihood around helping people in a time of need. When they've got fire damage or water intrusion or some sort of mess that needs to be cleaned up, the folks at ServPro are there to do that for you. So I want you to find them online. It's servpro.com, S-E-R-V, servpro.com, S-E-R-V, for more on that today. Make sure you check them out. And glad to have ServPro bring around the doghouse to us here today. All right, we've got Connor Riley coming up. We'll get more into the G-Day conversation with Connor. That's going to be a lot of fun. Also, before we're done today, we'll send out some congratulations for our Golden Shoe Bracket Challenge. We'll get to that here coming up in a little bit. And by the way, in a couple of minutes here, kind of an interesting sort of next phase of all of this. I'll tell you more about that here coming up in just a bit. Prior to that, though, let's go around the doghouse here. And I want to show you something on the screen here for a moment, because I think that there's a certain type of narrative that Georgia fans are very, very comfortable with. And it's the kind of thing we saw play out in 2022, where I think that Georgia fans that year, I think the team overall, we've heard Stetson Bennett talk about this at the time. Nolan Smith has talked about that. Now, some of what Nolan said was sort of exaggerated, but and he's admitted that himself. But there was definitely this thought of, man, Georgia just feels really fueled by any kind of doubt, any kind of, you know, not getting proper credit, that Georgia was just very comfortable kind of casting itself in the underdog role. And a lot of media types who are seemingly cynical about everything wanted to get kind of cynical about this for Georgia. Who was it that doubted UGA? We said this a million times. The one thing the media always does, the media always rewrites history after it happens to make an outcome of any sporting event seem more obvious than it was when we're all living through that. The reason why the media does that is the media, broadly speaking, likes to think of themselves as being really smart, that anything that happens, of course, we saw coming. There's the thing you see on social media all the time, as expected. There's nothing the media loves more than seeing something play out and saying, oh, I knew this was going to happen. I knew this was going to happen, you know, 6 months ago. So when sporting events take place, the winner of the sporting event is typically sort of recast as an obvious winner, and everybody knew it all the time. But actually, when you're living through history, sports just has a way of surprising us. And so in 2022, when Georgia was kind of marching to its second straight national championship, when it was over with, you know, a lot of media types were, who was ever doubting Georgia? This is the craziest thing I've ever heard. But some of us were alive in 2022, and some of us have a living memory of that year. And we know that at the beginning of the year, Georgia was just a preseason number three team. Both Alabama and Ohio State were expected to be better than Georgia that year. We also remember November of that year, in which pretty much everybody on the planet seemed to be thinking that Tennessee, including the entirety of the game day panel that was in Athens, pretty much the entirety of the game day panel thought Tennessee would beat Georgia on that particular Saturday. Now, listen, we don't get our feelings hurt about opinions very much. If people want to pick against Georgia, they're certainly free to do so. But if they do pick against Georgia and Georgia makes them look foolish, we're also free to remember that. And a lot of Georgia fans chose to remember that. There's some stakes in the game here when you shoot off your mouth and make some opinions. We live and die by that, and everybody else, we're going to assume they're going to, you know, follow the same rules there on that. And so Georgia fans had a really good time with that in that particular year. They liked proving doubters wrong. Fans seemed to feed off that. The team itself seemed to feed off that. And so last year, it seems like we had a little bit of a hard time truly conjuring that narrative for those who kind of wanted to do that. Now, there was some of the stuff with, like, some of the ESPN guys, you know, at the beginning of the year or whatever else. And I guess to Reese Davis' credit, he picked Michigan in the national championships. It turns out that's exactly what they did do. But perhaps we're seeing some early evidence that maybe conjuring that up for this upcoming season, maybe that's a little bit easier, at least in terms of the prevailing narrative. Now, this is not going to be true for poll voters or odds makers, but apparently there's a large sort of segment of the public that's perhaps showing some early skepticism of Georgia. Now, we say this not to get our feelings hurt. We're not mad about this. I just think it's kind of interesting here right now. Let me show you this on the X platform. There's a account called College Football Report citing, you know, a betting guy named John Ewing says, if you look at the percentage of money being bet on teams with a national title for this upcoming year, what you find out is the team getting by far and away the most dollars bet on them at the moment is Ohio State, conjuring up 41.4% of the money here right now. Isn't that interesting? Almost, not quite half, but more than a third, approaching a half of the people making bets right now, 41.4%, betting on Ohio State. Far more than the next team, Georgia, at 16%, really more than twice as many dollars being bet on Ohio State right now compared to Georgia. After that, it's Texas at 6.7%, Colorado at 5.1%, which makes you understand, you know, you can understand a lot about life by realizing that 5.1% of bettors have bet Colorado winning the national championship. Then you get Notre Dame and LSU, Alabama, Michigan, on and on and on you go. Point is that right now the team conjuring the most bets for the national championship is not Georgia, who will be the preseason number one. It is Ohio State. So for Georgia fans who like the idea of perhaps being a little bit of an underdog narrative or having somebody to prove wrong or, you know, just, you know, sort of silencing doubters, if nothing else, maybe this year kind of provides it, because there's no doubt the most talked about team in the offseason thus far has been Ohio State. Spending big dollars in the transfer portal, going out and stealing Chip Kelly, UCLA, and now a conference brethren, stealing their head coach and making him offensive coordinator, and all kinds of examples. Obviously, the Caleb Downs saga that played out. A lot going on around Ohio State, so much so that it's got the attention of bettors. And right now, no matter who actually has the preseason number one ranking, we know that's going to be Georgia. Apparently, a lot of steam around the Buckeyes, which could be making for some fun conversations that we head towards the fall. And that is around the doghouse here today on Dog Nation Daily. Let me give you a couple of notes here just for a moment before we bring on our great friend Connor Rada to preview G-Day. First of all, when we conclude today's show, we're going to give out our Golden Shoe final standings for our bracket challenge, and eventually we're going to invite the winner to be on the program. We're going to give out our top 10 today, so we'll at least mention the names of everyone who finished the top 10. And I thought this was one of the most fun things that we've done. People seem to really enjoy it. It's very casual, very laid back. You know, we're not doing this for money. I'm sure, probably did have, you know, big dollar bracket things, but that's not what we're doing. We're just sort of doing this for fun. In fact, we had such a good response to this. I'm going to try something here just for a moment. And this is a little bit more complicated because the infrastructure is not quite as built out as some of the bracket stuff is. But for those of you who enjoyed being a part of our Golden Shoe Bracket Challenge, or if you missed this and you want to do something different, perhaps you just like this sport better, we're going to try to do, and I say try to do, as I promised you before, like, I'm not an expert when it comes to, like, handling the logistics and stuff like this, but we're going to try to do, for the people who seem to enjoy the Golden Shoe type deal or the bracket type deal, and maybe you'd like to do something else, we're going to try to do a Masters pool as well. And once again, this is not for money. You want to go be on the Masters Calcutta for big-time dollars, I'm sure there's a lot of places you can go to do that. That's not what this is. This is just for fun. This is just for the sport of it. But if there are enough people who want to do this, I will put it together. Now, it's already Tuesday. Masters tees off early on Thursday. So we're going to have to do this kind of quick if that's what you want to do. So let me give you a reminder here. Not the prettiest graphic, but this is also just really, really casual. Send me your name, your email, your mailing address, and your phone number to brandon.adams@dognation.com. That's my email. Send your name, your email, your mailing address, your phone number, brandon.adams@dognation.com. If we get enough people who want to do this, to be a part of a master's pool, we'll do something similar to our Golden Shoe Bracket Challenge. Once again, this is not for money. This is not anything like that. This is just for fun. We'll let the winner come on the air. The winner of our Golden Shoe Bracket Challenge is going to get to come on the air here eventually, too. So that is going to go down. All of that taking place here if we have enough people who want to do it. So if I get enough responses, I'll reach out. We'll make this happen. Once again, your name, your email, your mailing address, your phone number to brandon.adams@dognation.com. All right, one more thing before we bring on Connor Riley. Let me also give a shout out to our friends at Mr. Rooter, who are doing some really important work for people in our audience right now when it comes to whole home water filtration or drain cleaning or repair to your water heater, things like that. This is a really great plumbing company dedicated to addressing your plumbing needs as quickly as possible. Now, that's residential, that's commercial, that's everything in between. They got flexible service options. They offer you upfront pricing. So you really get some strong peace of mind when you work with them there as well. Exceptional customer service. One of the ways in which they demonstrate this exceptional customer service as well is that there's a $29 service fee typically, but it's always waived anytime you get some repair done. So make sure you find MrRooterGeorgia.com for more on that today. That is MrRooterGeorgia.com. For more on that today. All right, a lot for us to do. Getting ready for G-Day on Saturday. So let's talk to the guy now who's been close to it all spring long. And he's been great in the coverage, and he's helping us get ready for the big spring game on Saturday. How about Connor Riley here this morning on Dog Nation Daily, presented by ServPro?
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
We will say hello to Connor Riley. Connor's been doing a great job with all of the lead up to G-Day here. Very, very excited about that. Connor, we appreciate your time as always. And gave a little bit of a bold prediction a little earlier. I said that based on the buzz this spring, based on what I hope to see happen this fall, I'm calling on Colby Young and Arian Smith to both have touchdowns on Saturday, punctuating what has been, at least all intents and purposes, and a lot of this coming from the reporting you've been doing, really strong springs thus far. What do you think of that as a prediction for this Saturday?
I like it. I think if we see Arian Smith, with a long touchdown, I think Glenn Schumann might actually show some emotion because he's had long touchdowns in each of the previous two scrimmages. And at some point, you just throw your hands up. Colby Young's had a strong spring throughout. I think you have to be really encouraged by what he's been able to come in and do sort of, you know, at that size, eclipsing smaller defensive backs like the moon over the sun. I think it's really impressive what he's been able to do, and I'll be interested in seeing how he looks this on G-Day, because when we saw him earlier this spring, he clearly wasn't 100% healthy. So for him to have had the spring that he's had while playing with a little bit of an ankle injury is encouraging. As far as Arian Smith, and I sort of wrote this last week, this isn't the first time we've heard good things about Arian Smith. That is the first time it's really shown up in practice in a meaningful way. But I think Arian knows, I think just about everyone knows, you have to go out there and see him actually do it and have the consistency and fight through it. You know, last year he was able to get through a season healthy, which was a big accomplishment for him. But then he battles, you know, issues with drops. And so I think with Arian, it's encouraging that he's taking this step this spring. And by all accounts, has been one of the breakout players for Georgia. But he's got to make sure that that transitions and carries over with him into the fall. Otherwise, you know, it's going to be the same old there. So I'm really interested in seeing how they go out and use him, because as much as we'd love to see those long touchdown catches, I think if he's catching, you know, quick screens and taking those 10 yards or working over the middle and catching those 10 to 15 yard passes, I think could be better indication of what he might be able to give Georgia this fall than just simply another long touchdown.
And I agree with that. But the point I made a little earlier, because what you're describing is more of a complete receiver, which is obviously what he wants to be as he moves on the NFL. But the thing I've been kind of hung up on for the last few weeks is that I think that Georgia could be more dangerous as an offense. And that's already for the last 3 years been a very potent offense, you know, essentially among the very best in college football. But it could be even more dangerous if it could find a way to be a little bit more balanced in how it scores. You know, last year, most rushing touchdowns in America, but nowhere near that in terms of the passing touchdowns. You know, can Carson have a big year in terms of passing touchdowns? To me, that makes the Georgia offense even more dangerous. And that's where a guy like, I would say, Arian Smith and Colby Young are both really valuable. As I told our audience, you know, Arian's only got 20 career catches, but six of those are touchdowns. You know, last year, Colby Young, for a Miami offense that barely scored any points at all, he had five touchdowns. That would have been more for Georgia than any player not named Brock Bowers, that if you're looking for more passing touchdowns, these are the kinds of players, maybe more so than a Dominic Lovett or more so than, you know, maybe even a Dylan Bell. These are the kinds of players that could really pay fruitful dividends in terms of kind of finding that success through the air when you're obviously speaking about those passing touchdowns.
Yeah, I'm interested. You know, you bring up Dominic Lovett there. Can we see him maybe be a more explosive down the field receiver than what we saw last season for Georgia? I think he's going to be someone who's playing a little bit more outside, doing, I think, what Ladd McConkey did last year, and they had Dominic Lovett in the slot there a lot. And so if you're able to turn him into a more explosive outside receiver, if you're able to obviously get contributions from Arian Smith and Colby Young, you know, Anthony Evans, I'm interested in seeing how he factors into this wide receiver room. With Brock Bowers gone, I think Georgia's going to lean a little bit more on its wide receivers this season, and it's a little bit more of an all-around athletic room, I think, than what you saw a season ago. And so when you add in a big body like Colby Young, you add in a speedster like Arian Smith, sort of like in a way filling out a basketball team where, all right, Colby Young is your center. You've got Dominic Lovett as your point guard. You've got Arian Smith as your wing. And you have a number of different receivers that are going to be able to beat you because of their size, speed, and skill sets. Whereas with Georgia last year, I don't necessarily think they had quite the same depth of athlete out there on the perimeter. And so I think that's why the receiver position has been one of the better ones for Georgia this spring. And I'll be really interested in seeing how they go out there and perform on Saturday with Carson, but Gunnar Stockton as well.
You said, I want to talk about Gunnar Stockton here in a moment too, because I thought your piece on him was very interesting this morning. You said something also I wanted to touch on. Use the word outside to describe Dominic Lovett. Is your belief that Dominic will play more outside for Georgia this year? Obviously, he came to Georgia as a very productive and successful kind of slot receiver inside guy from Missouri. At Georgia, this is still a program we think that probably wants to use the two tight end set as much as it can. Does that kick Lovett to the outside? Does he come off the field when Georgia's in a two tight end set? How do you think Georgia's going to use Dominic Lovett here this year?
You know, I think it'll be really interesting, especially with what Georgia gets from Ra-Ra Thomas. He's been coming back from a foot injury, but I think Dominic Lovett, you've heard really good things about him this spring. Kirby Smart used the word dominant there, in flashes, so to speak. And I think the reality is, you know, he's probably going to be one of Georgia's best receivers. I think if we're placing odds on who's going to lead Georgia in receiving, he's probably the odds on favorite. Now, I wouldn't write those odds in Sharpie, and I think a lot of that can change following G-Day here, but I'll be really interested in seeing sort of the usage and how they go about employing Lovett on Saturday. Because, you know, for a while we thought Ladd McConkey was going to be a guy that, you know, played primarily in the slot and you had other guys on the outside. But if I'm recalling correctly, he played roughly 75-80% of his snaps last season on the outside. And I think with McConkey gone, you could now possibly see Lovett move into that role moving forward, thus allowing you to play someone like a Dylan Bell in that slot role and sort of have him work the middle of the field and use his skills as a running back as well to make things difficult. So I'll be really interested in seeing how they go about employing Lovett in terms of where he lines up specifically as compared to the slot or on the outside.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's actually a higher percentage than I thought that it would have been for him last year. Gunnar Stockton's the guy you wrote about. We talked about Gunnar a little bit yesterday, and I totally agree that I think that Gunnar Stockton is maybe among the most important players for Georgia tomorrow or Saturday. And some of that is because of just how much we've talked about quarterback as of late with future recruits and things along those lines. As you know, I'm very, very high on Gunnar's future. And I'd also say that if Gunnar Stockton has what we think of as sort of a big day on Saturday, I think it could be extra meaningful, because the point I tried to make yesterday, Connor, is that I sort of think of Gunnar Stockton as a little bit of a kind of a cousin to Stetson Bennett, in that he's kind of a gamer, got moxie, you know, physical, mental toughness, sort of plays the game, sort of all cliches, blue collar, lunch pail, things like that. You know, like G-Day is sort of a day for different things than that. It's sort of a day to just sort of stand there and look pretty. Can you just sort of stand there in the pocket and deliver the football? That's not always a spot in which Stetson Bennett kind of thrived. His 2022 G-Day stat line wasn't really all that impressive. He completed less than half of his passes. He threw, you know, two interceptions that day, and yet he would go on to be a Heisman finalist there that fall. So the point is that if Gunnar can look the part as sort of the pretty stand in the pocket and just deliver the football quarterback on G-Day, to me, that speaks even more for what he can be when he's actually playing more true, real football, perhaps in a backup role this fall, or maybe as a starting quarterback for Georgia, perhaps in 2025, because Much like Stetson Bennett, I don't know that G-Day was the perfect format for him. I don't know that G-Day is the perfect format for a Gunner either. So if he looks really, really good, then to me, that just speaks to the strides that he's probably taken.
No, you took the words right out of my mouth there. I think you look back to how Gunner played in that Florida State game and what he was doing and how he sort of felt comfortable, you know, operating the Georgia offense. There's no way Kirby Smart's going to let him play that way on G-Day. Gunner opened himself up to a lot of hits, and I think that gives Kirby some pause in terms of allowing him to play that way. Now, it's a bowl game. It's the end of the season. You have an offseason to get healthy. They're not going to be allowed to touch Gunner Stockton on Saturday. And I think they're going to want to see, as you point out, Gunner Stockton operating from the pocket. With G-Day, look, like, they're not going to run the ball a ton. It's just not set up to be that kind of a scrimmage. And so they're going to ask Gunner to make a lot of difficult throws to the outside, throwing into tight windows. And that's just something we haven't seen a lot from Gunner Stockton. And with the transfer portal opening up on April 16th, when you have the fact that Georgia has wanted to have four quarterbacks, getting back to accepting a commitment from Dylan Raiola, accepting a commitment from Jaden Maiva out of the transfer portal. We'll see what Georgia ultimately does in terms of quarterbacks moving forward. But with Gunner Stockton, if you see him play well on Saturday and see him make strides as a passer from the pocket, I do think that eases maybe the long-term worry that you might have at the quarterback position, both from a body standpoint, but also a future production standpoint, as we all sort of expect this to be Carson Beck's last year. I know Gunner was in this room a season ago, and yes, they had three scholarship quarterbacks at that point in time. I think if Gunner goes out and plays well, and specifically in a type of setting that is not tailored best to his skill sets, I think that, as you point out, is going to go a long way to answering some of the questions about his long-term future and viability as a starter for Georgia.
All right, I want to conclude in a moment by talking about the defense. Let me stay on the offense and just give you a chance. Anything else that really stands out to you about the offense? I mean, you could probably talk about offensive line rotation. How much do we see Micah Morris compared to how much we see Dylan Fairchild? I'd say that's probably pretty interesting. You know, same thing, you know, in terms of like a, you know, how does Monroe Freeling perhaps play? I think that Georgia right now sort of feels like it's probably got at least eight offensive linemen that it feels really good about, but like a Freeling and certainly, you know, a Daniel Calhoun kind of sort of filling out the sort of second five there. But beyond maybe some offensive line rotational stuff, what else is really important for you about the offense on Saturday that we haven't already discussed?
I'm very interested in seeing how Roderick Robinson looks. Now, I know I just recently poo-pooed what running backs and the running game does on G-Day, but Roderick has had a good spring, and given Trevor Etienne's DUI and the status for the Clemson game being unknown at this point in time, I think you need to see something out of Roderick Robinson, specifically how he runs. How has he improved in his second year in the program there? You know, I'm not expecting 15 carries for 150 yards with him ripping off explosive runs left and right, but I am interested in seeing how physical he is and how improved he is from last year to this year. Showed some nice moments in that Florida State game, but he also missed a lot of the season last year with an ankle injury. So how does he look in comparison to some of Georgia's other running backs? Because I'm operating under the belief that they're not going to have Trevor Etienne for that game against Clemson. And so you have a major question at that running back position. That's why they went out and brought in Etienne from the transfer portal. And, you know, Nate Frazier might come in and provide some juice, but he doesn't arrive until later in the summer. And so I think if Roderick Robinson's able to go out there, answer a lot of questions about what Georgia has beyond Trevor Etienne, I think that's going to go a long way. Because even aside from the Clemson game, look, Georgia has shown they're going to give multiple running backs chances to make an impact. I believe 2020 is the only year that Kirby Smart hasn't had two 100-yard carry running backs. So they're going to need a second running back regardless. And so I think Roderick Robinson has the best chance to be that guy. And I'll be interested in seeing how that looks on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, here's my thing about Roderick Robinson. You know, is he just the new version of what Georgia has been the last few years, the running back position? If that'd be the case, well, you know, clearly the results are, you know, good enough there on that because of all the winning that Georgia's been doing. But is there a chance, Connor, this is actually a step up from what Georgia has had where, you know, I think a lot of fans who our audience a little bit more plugged in, but I think a lot of the sort of average, you know, perhaps casual Georgia fans, I think they might be a little bit surprised to find out how meager Georgia's overall rushing stats, other than like, say, rushing touchdowns, but the yards per carry average, things like that, haven't always been like RBU style the last few years. Like, is there a chance that Roderick Robinson is a step up from what George has been in the running back position? Or is this just the sort of new name, new face, providing the running back production we've gotten accustomed to assuming from UGA during this national championship era?
It sounds like you've been hanging out a lot with Kalee Manziel, because it sounds like you're poo-pooing South Georgia's own Dejan Edwards there and what he was able to do for Georgia. Like, you know, Dejan, I think, was a good back for the role that he was asked to fill for Georgia. And obviously, I think moving forward with Roderick, you'd love to see some more explosive runs. You heard Kirby mention that. That's something that's really been missing from Georgia going back to the Jim Chaney days. Like, they just have not been the same explosive running team since then. And part of that I think is the sacrifice you make when you've installed the offense that Georgia has run these past couple of years. They're scoring 40 points a game. They're effective running the ball in the red zone. So I think you certainly take those trade-offs there, but it has not exactly been an explosive Georgia running back game of late. And to your point there, the numbers do back that up. And so thus I'll be interested in seeing, and this is probably something we're gonna have to obviously wait until the season to find out, just how different is this running game in year two under Mike Bobo in this offense? Because obviously, you know, in his first time as the offensive coordinator at Georgia, specifically at the end of his time there, he had great running games, be it from guys like Todd Gurley, Sony Michel, Nick Chubb. He had a bunch of different body types that found ways to be successful. So I'll be interested in seeing how the Georgia running game tweaks this year versus how, it maybe as you point out, it does stay similar to what we saw in the Todd Monken era in terms of the running game and running back production.
So I want to ask you about this. I don't want to get too deep in the weeds because, you know, frankly, my football knowledge is not deep enough to go there. But you go back to 2019. This is pre-Jim Chaney. You know, Georgia had receivers out there, you know, deep down the field, just cleaning the house with blocks. And we saw this team get explosive runs, you know, kind of with regularity. I guess that would have been the James Coley type deal. But there were more explosive runs in, you know, Chaney 2018, even Coley 2019. When Todd Monken got here in 2020, the offense was an upgraded offense. But I would say whether it's coincidence or whether it was because receivers were doing different stuff, the explosive runs for Georgia have kind of gone away from 2020 to present day. They just don't get explosive runs the way they used to. Now, you can't be great at everything all the time. That's maybe part of this. But is the reason that Georgia doesn't get the explosive runs the way they once did early days of Kirby Smart, is it because receivers are just doing different stuff now?
I think that's a big part of it. I think they have a much more, they started under Monken, and I think continued under Bobo, a much more horizontal passing game. And so they're just content to lean on the outside a little bit more with the receivers and obviously Brock Bowers there as well, rather than maybe try and have the receivers play a more vertical style. And thus you have deep shots downfield, obviously, but also you just have them occupying defenders down the field farther there. And so it's a stylistic change. And look, Todd Monken, I think his most recent game with the Baltimore Ravens shows he doesn't exactly want to lean on the run game to move the football. But I think you can certainly point to, like, look, they had James Cook and Zamir White for the 2020 and 2021 seasons, and those guys are going to be starting NFL running backs next season. And, you know, I don't necessarily believe it's a true lack of talent at that running back position, but rather just a preference to do different things and to play in a different way. And look, Georgia's averaged 40 points a game in each of the last two seasons. So it's hard to quibble with the results there. But as you point out, look, you know, you can't be great at everything. You do have to make some sacrifices. So I think going forward, it'll be interesting in seeing, you know, is Georgia content to continue to do what they've done on the offensive side of the ball and be very productive there? Or perhaps do they want to maybe go back to what they had used to been playing and how they had played in the early days of Kirby Smart's time here at Georgia?
All right, last thing for you. And look, I love watching Georgia play defense. I just think it's fun. Georgia plays defense the way that a lot of teams play offense. They, you know, very much trying to make something happen in defense, which I love. I've never felt, though, that I was very good at watching Georgia play defense on G-Day. I've always just sort of thought of spring games, Georgia spring game, everybody's spring game, as a little bit of a showcase of the offense. In fact, I think there are a lot of coaches that almost like pro wrestling style fix their spring games, make their offenses look good. I've had a conspiracy theory about this for a long time. But the point is, when it comes to Georgia and G-Day, I've never been, I think, very good at watching defense on G-Day. A, Georgia's always, every spring, seemingly got all kinds of labrum issues and things like that. So a bunch of guys are not playing. There's that. You know, edge rushers and pass rushers can't, you know, bring quarterback to the ground. So B, you're sort of missing the thing that you like most about defense during the fall. And, you know, beyond that, it's a pretty simple game plan, I guess, in addition to that, too. So give me a tip on how to watch the Georgia defense on Saturday, and in particular, what you might be watching the Georgia defense for.
Yeah, let's first point out, you look at the spine of that Georgia defense. Christian Miller, not 100% this spring. Tyrion Ingram-Dawkins is not going to play with a foot injury. Small Monday, not playing with a foot injury. We'll see what Malachi Starks is able to do. They're just not as healthy on the defensive side of the ball this spring as they are on the offensive side. And so you're going to see a lot of different faces there. I think G-Day and what we've seen from Kirby Smart and how he wants to go about doing this, it's much closer to, like, say, a 7-on-7 environment than it is really a true 1v1s, 11-on-11 scrimmage there. And so it's hard to know sort of what we're going to see from this group. And look, the defensive line, the front seven in particular, has come under a lot of scrutiny this spring based on the comments that Kirby Smart gave to Chris Lowe. That's where this narrative was created. And so I'll be interested, I guess, what I'm watching for specifically – how the corners hold up in man-on-man coverage. Yeah. They hold up on the outside defending guys like Colby Young and Arian Smith, because that's maybe the best thing that you can take away from there. And with Kamari Lassiter moving on, with Georgia having, I think, a lot of guys that feels comfortable playing at the cornerback position, I think that's perhaps where maybe you can learn a thing or two, maybe safety there as well, especially if Malachi Starks isn't going to play. Creates more opportunities for guys like Dan Jackson, Janelle Aguero. Maybe we're going to see KJ Bolden do some impressive things on Saturday. It's mostly those secondary guys, and especially where a year where Georgia has to replace Javon Buller, Tyke Smith, and Kamari Lassiter, I think that's where you're going to learn a thing or two. Unfortunately, for those hoping to see improvements from Georgia's front seven, the spring game, to me, just doesn't really afford those opportunities.
Good stuff, Connor. We appreciate it. Looking forward to seeing you in Athens there on Saturday and seeing everybody that's going to be there. It's always a lot of fun to get together and do all of this. We appreciate your insight on that and encourage people to continue to read everything you've got coming there at DogNation.com. And you mentioned your good friend of mine, Kaylee Manziel. Your show on Thursday is also taking off and doing big stuff there. Dog Nation at large, that's what we're calling that, correct?
Mm-hmm. Correct. And before I go, I'm going to give out a free Masters winner's pick here.
Please.
The guy who will be seeing the champions dinner for next year's Masters will be Wyndham Clark.
Wow.
So go ahead. We're gonna ride with Wyndham Clark, U.S. Open champion, and that's who we're going to pick this year.
So I put this out a moment ago. We had a very successful Golden Shoe Bracket Challenge. A lot of people entered, and we seemed to have a good time with that. So I said, hey, if you guys want to do a Masters pool, maybe I'll put one together. I've already gotten a tremendous response. I'm watching my phone blow up here as we're doing all of this. So, Connor, maybe if you are feeling confident, maybe you can pop in the Golden Shoe Masters pool.
I will 100% do so. I'm just letting you guys know who's playing for second, because Wyndham Clark's coming in first.
That is good stuff. Connor, thanks for being here. Appreciate that. We'll look forward to seeing you there on Saturday, and then back here again on Dog Nation Daily, presented by SurPro again very soon as well.
Yep, as always, it was a pleasure.
Good stuff.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Yeah, I don't know that I'm quite ready to make my Masters pick as of yet. It's just Tuesday. I'm going to, kind of put my finger to the air here a little bit and see what else comes out. But an interesting pick there on that. Also interesting was the, Connor mentioned the Champions Dinner, John Rahm bringing the Spanish flavor back to the Champions Dinner here this week. That's always one of my favorite things. I just love that. Always really good stuff. And I always love the fact, I think that Augusta National, I'm not going to go to Masters tangent here. I think that Augusta National does like marketing better than any entity in all sports. They do such a good job of making us, for that this particular week, we all sort of feel like we're a member of the club, you know what I'm saying? Because they put the Masters dinner on social media, here's the menu, and nobody does social media better than them. Their app works better than any sports app, half of which barely work at all. The Masters for 1 week out of the year works perfectly all the time. It's just they do just such a great job of making you feel like you're a member of the club for this particular week, even if you're not a patron that gets a chance to go. They make you sort of feel like you're there, which is frankly about all we can ever ask for. So they do a great job, and it is kind of fun to see. So maybe we'll have enough people to kind of get together on this and do a little Golden Shoe fun for the Masters, because people seem to enjoy the bracket. We'll kind of celebrate some of our folks who did well on that here coming up in a moment. Prior to that, though, let's go cruising around the SEC, courtesy of Royal Caribbean. Of course, getting ready for our Dog Nation cruise. And I was actually yesterday looking back on my time on board Icon of the Seas back in January. And first of all, hard to believe it's already been a few months since I was there. But the memories kind of live on forever. And that's the thing that I think my whole family, we just love. we get a chance to be on one of these Royal Caribbean cruise vacations. You come back, you talk about the fun that you had, and you go back, you look at the pictures, you kind of relive all of that. Mike, when you see those images from Icon of the Seas, you realize what a special experience that you had. I obviously, you love the, you know, the largest cruise ship ever constructed, but you also love it for the way in which Icon is just introducing so many fun new things into the cruise experience. By the way, that's the hideaway right there. That's that special area up there near the top, and you can be in the hot tubs. You can look it over the rest of the ship, and you see all the great pool decks there, and a chance, you know, this is like an adults only part of Icon of the Seas. You want to be on the back of the ship. You look at those water beds, not water beds, but like, you know, what do you call those? Like lounge beds right there in the middle of the pool that's overlooking the back of the ship. You're actually, if you're watching a video, you're suspended in air above the rest of the ship, looking out over the aft of the ship. What an amazing thing. And what a great reminder of just how much fun Icon of the Seas is, and a great chance for you to be a part of a Royal Caribbean cruise vacation here in 2024. Now, Jessica Slater's the travel agent we trust for all of our Royal Caribbean cruise vacation needs. So I want you to give her a call, 770-718-9147. That's 770-718-9147. You can also email her, jslater@dreamvacations.com. By the way, look at the Aqua Dome there with the water coming down. Just an incredible, you know, part of what Icon of the Seas is all about. So make sure you check them out today, and Jessica Slater will help you get planned up for your Royal Caribbean cruise vacation. All right, let's go cruise around the SEC, courtesy of Royal Caribbean here for a few minutes. So we've obviously talked about yesterday, the Kentucky basketball opening, and as sometimes happens here, you're seeing some high-profile seeming rejections here. Jay Wright content to remain unemployed, or at least not employed as a coach anymore. He's content to sort of enjoy his retirement. We don't believe that Danny Hurley has any plans on leaving national champion UConn. More on them in a moment. And now we have reason to believe that Alabama coach Nate Oates is content to stay put there as well. Oates putting this out on social media that he's currently very happy, saying, "I'm fully committed to this team at Alabama and to this university. We've already accomplished some great things here, and there is nothing I want more than for the University of Alabama to win its first national championship in men's basketball. Despite any rumors to the contrary, rest assured that I will continue that pursuit as your head coach." So Nate Oates seemingly ending all speculation, he might take the Kentucky job. And as I'm seeing this, I couldn't help but wonder, what if all those years ago, when Tubby Smith left Georgia to go to Kentucky, because at the time, of course, that's what you do. What if Tubby Smith, somehow, some way, Georgia could have found a way to keep him, found a way to kind of keep that going? You know, Georgia had, you know, made the Sweet 16. They'd beaten a number one seed, Purdue, in what was the 95 NCAA tournament. They did lose the following year in the first round. But you know, Georgia was enjoying a level of basketball success that the program really hadn't enjoyed nearly as much. What if Georgia could have kept Tubby then? He would go on to win a national championship with Kentucky. Now, he would also, by the end of his career, not quite be the same level of coach anymore. But what if, you know, what if Georgia could have done then what Alabama seemingly is doing with Nate Oates right now? I would say this is a pretty big win for the Alabama program, because I would think right now Oates has the look of being one of the best coaches in all of college basketball. And there's a feeling now, because of transfer portal, because of NIL, why couldn't Alabama have just as bright a future in basketball as Kentucky thinks that it has, being the blue blood that it typically is? But right now Alabama says, we feel like we can win just as much, and Nate Oates apparently believes that there as well. I think that's, just to be honest, a pretty favorable situation that Alabama probably finds itself in, and probably an example that the Kentucky job, in comparison to other college basketball programs, is, you know, perhaps not the same level of job that it once was. I think there's probably been a little bit of a diminishing of the value of being the Kentucky basketball coach. Now, why is that? Well, let me transition to the next topic as a way of explaining that. UConn won the national championship again last night. We've seen back-to-back titles before, but I think it's important to note how different this back-to-back is for UConn compared to previous back-to-backs we've sort of seen here, in that there was so much changeover from year to year with what UConn returned. Three top players from last year's team gone, active in the transfer portal, bringing in new players, and UConn won again. A fairly anonymous team, as a somewhat casual college basketball fan now, I really don't know the names of any of these UConn players, but I think we're all impressed with the way in which they ran through the tournament. Complete dominance. Really, nobody's playing them close, including Purdue last night. It's a testament to what Danny Hurley is building there. And as I said before, it's an example of the kind of thing that I think makes the Kentucky job overall a little less valuable than it once was. Because I was thinking about this. You know, obviously NIL is the hot topic, and how NIL leverages like player acquisition, of course, is incredibly important here. I think there's an extent to which being a big spender in NIL is more impactful in basketball than it is in football, because rosters are smaller. You know, perhaps some of the dollars the players are commanding in some cases might be smaller. You need to spend big across an entire roster in football to be as successful as a program like Georgia's been or Ohio State's trying to be or whatever. But in basketball, you just have a much better opportunity to make a more immediate impact. And UConn seems to say, we have no chance of being competitive in football, but we have a history of being good in basketball, both women's and men's. You know, why not leverage that? And right now, that's what they're doing. And I think Danny Hurley looks around and he says, when I see the commitment to basketball here at UConn, for now, UConn's a better job than Kentucky is. So therefore, they can pay me big. They can pay my roster well. And why would I leave here? That's what Hurley seems to be saying. By comparison to Kentucky, a lot of you who know this, who follow this, know this. Kentucky does not have a very, at least we're led to believe, a very well-built-out apparatus when it comes to NIL for basketball. That they're trying to upgrade their NIL performance because while they have great fan passion, they haven't had a lot of organization around their NIL structure. And it is just a fact that in the SEC, every dollar you spend on a basketball team is dollars you could be spending on football. And for as big as Kentucky basketball is, one of the small number of schools where basketball is probably bigger than football. But in terms of the actual revenue produced, football still makes more money than basketball does. And so if you're spending big on the second most lucrative sport on your campus, no matter how popular it is, the second most lucrative, that's not necessarily an efficient use of funds. And so because of just the overall size and scope of SEC football, you know, I don't know that the Kentucky basketball job means what it once did at a time in which sort of basketball-only schools or schools that feel like they have a better chance of succeeding in basketball than they do in football are being as aggressive as they're choosing to be. So what does this mean for the next 10, 20 years of Kentucky basketball? I'm not telling you it's about to disappear, but the advantage that those of us who grew up in a Rick Pitino age or when Tubby Smith came there, you know, those of us who have a certain perception of Kentucky – I don't believe that perception currently matches reality, and a team like UConn winning a back-to-back national championship, I think, kind of proves how true that really is. Let me also do a football note here. Going back to this past weekend, one of the guys we've talked about a little bit during this space the last few days has been Cam Coleman, the Auburn wide receiver, the freshman. And I would say on Saturday, the buzz that had been generated about him throughout the spring was really proven right. He had 4 catches, 94 yards in Auburn's spring game. Now, it's still not obvious what the quarterback situation is going to be there at Auburn or kind of what the overall vibe is for Hugh Freeze going into his second year. But I don't think there's any doubt if you saw the highlights, you know, Coleman's a big-looking dude, uses his body well on the field. I don't think there's any doubt that right now this has the look of being one of the true impact freshmen in this league for the upcoming season. Now, it's also kind of a situation here where one good wide receiver who lines up so far away from the football is probably not quite as impactful as like one good defensive lineman or one, you know, it's like if your best player is a wide receiver, you're still maybe somewhat limited in what you're going to be able to do as a team. But no doubt Auburn seems to have found itself a very good freshman receiver in Cam Coleman. That is a name I'm guessing we hear a lot about as we approach the fall, and we'll make that cruising around the SEC courtesy of Royal Caribbean. So speaking of our Golden Shoe Bracket Challenge, I want to take a moment here to celebrate the top 10. Now, we said this yesterday, that based on the way that our sort of bracket manager operated, you got 32 points winning the championship game. So UConn's win last night swung the balance of our final rankings in a mighty direction. Almost, I think it's everybody but one in our top 10 had UConn as their national champion. So let's give you the top 10 here. Starting number 10, Brian Lamb came in. Number 9, Robbie Rainey. Number 8, Josh Bird. Shanna Jarrett had been the leader, I'm talking about from pillar to post, but she had Purdue winning it all. And so the UConn win hurt her last night, but she finished number 7. Joseph Barnes comes in at number 6. And then the top 5, Cam Cochran at number 5. Nick, is it Scheinman? I hope I pronounced that correctly. At number 4, Paul Gagnon at number 3, Blair Calhoun at number 2. 1 point behind our eventual winner And if you were a part of our regular comment sections, our cool down and our first and 15, Randy Hall brings home 132 points and by one skinny little point beats Blair Calhoun, and Randy Hall is our winner. The difference in this turned out to be, I guess, the Sweet 16, where Randy, I guess, got one, he got four additional points in the Sweet 16, enough to make up a little bit of a deficit there. And by one point, Randy Hall is our Golden Shoe Bracket Challenge winner. We'll get a chance to welcome Randy onto the show here coming up in the very near future to celebrate that with him. But congratulations to Randy Hall on winning the Golden Shoe Bracket Challenge. Lousy, stinking Gators, there is no winning for them, not in football, not in basketball, not in anything. 1,249 days. That's how long it's been since they've beaten the Georgia Bulldogs. That is why they are the Lousy, stinking Gators. And that is why we love making fun of them here. Dog Nation Daily, presented by Serpro. We'll see all of you back here again tomorrow.